You are listening to KEPW LP 97.3 FM in Eugene, Oregon. We also simulcast at www.kepw.org.
The Lane County Mutual Aid Network is building a framework for neighbors to help each other out during this crisis. People can request aid, volunteer aid, or get started building their own neighborhood pod at their website, lanemutualaid.org. If you have questions, you can email lanemutualaid@gmail.com, and for those who are not connected to the internet, you can call 541-321-8749.
This is Talk Is Cheap, and I have a special edition for you today. Author Michael Schumann. He's just come out with a book called Put Your Money Where Your Life Is, about local investing. So we can turn this whole thing around and stop using multinational corporations and start supporting our local communities and get out of the... Now, you anti-capitalists out there, this is a form of capitalism, although a lot of the investments are co-ops, which I don't know, I call them co-ops capitalism, but I mean, they are worker-owned, so technically I guess they're not capitalism. But, you know, if I look at this as using their rules against them, their own rules against them. So if you're an anti-capitalist, someday we can move out of capitalism, but right now, let's use their own rules against them. So, a few disclaimers. This is for informational purposes only. The opinions and statements on this show are not that of the producers of KEPW, Eugene Peace Works, or the affiliates like Radio for All that this is uploaded to. And again, this is for informational purposes only. You should research this stuff heavily before investing any money. Probably talk to an attorney and an investment advisor and research this stuff. All right, so having said that, do not remove this tag under penalty of law. Yeah, so this is for informational purposes only. Did I say that? This is for informational purposes only. Okay, so yeah, coming up, Michael Schumann. I got this book. I got Barnes & Noble to deliver this book in about 3 days. Put Your Money Where Your Life Is. He's also written several books on local investing that I highly recommend. And I got this through the Sustainable Economies Law Center. They have a site called The Next Egg, where you can get a lot of this information also. So that's what we'll be talking about here on Talk Is Cheap on KEPW 97.3 LP, Eugene Peace Works Community Radio, broadcasting on KEPW.org. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Michael, are you there? Can you hear me?
Good. I can hear you fine, although you're kind of soft.
Okay, there you go. I'm just doing a little transition here from on the mixing board. All right, so I'm talking with Michael Schumann. He's just released a book called Put Your Money Where Your Life Is, and he's written several books on local investing that I highly recommend. I read his book on incubators, small business incubators, quite a while ago. And I just picked this up at Barnes & Noble. I got Barnes & Noble to order this. They got it to me in 3 days. Put Your Money Where Your Life Is. All right, so Michael Schumann. First of all, just disclaimer that, I said it during the intro, but this is for informational purposes only. We're not financial advisors here. You need to research this stuff yourself. So why is it that I've been researching my own 401k and IRAs, and what I find is the sustainable funds like Vanguard and even the one advertised on NPR, the TIAA, that one's invested in commercial real estate, and the others are invested in tech stocks. And to me, that's not sustainable. Those aren't sustainable businesses. Why is it that everything's invested in multinational corporations?
Well, a lot of this comes down to securities laws. We had securities laws that were enacted in the 1930s and 1940s, and they were enacted to prevent some of the deceptive activities that occurred before the Great Depression took hold, so that grandma would not be sold swamp land in Florida. And one result of that is that the only companies that really could afford to easily get through all of the legal hoops in order to take on the average investor are large companies. That's beginning to change. A lot of us have worked very hard to change the laws around that. But until quite recently, it just was too expensive for a local business to raise even a penny from a grassroots investor. It would cost that company $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 of legal work, and that was just too high for most of them. Now that the transaction costs are coming down, the whole universe of local investing is, I think, coming into focus. Investment crowdfunding was legalized in 2016, and it has steadily been growing ever since. And I think that may be what we should be looking at.
And that's the Jobs Act, right, that Obama passed?
Yes. The Jobs Act, which stood for Jumpstart Our Businesses Act, was signed by Obama in 2012. It went through a bunch of regulatory hurdles, so it was finally enacted in 2016, and some interesting data points about it. So the impact of the Jobs Act is that any company can raise, until recently, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a second, but until recently, any company could raise about $1 million, and any investor could invest as much as $2,000 per person per year. And they greatly reduced the cost and the regulatory hurdles for people to do that. And as a result, several thousand companies have raised well over $500 million in 4 years. And they've raised that money from, at this point, it's about 700,000 individual investors. The average investment is about $800. The average raise by companies is about $280,000. And the most successful entrepreneurs have been companies run by women and people of color. That is, those individuals who have been, most systematically excluded from the conventional capital markets have been the best beneficiaries of these reforms. So, yeah, there has been this enormous sea change. And the little footnote I wanted to add is that in the first week of November, the SEC changed the law to to allow companies to raise up to $5 million. But it's going to be a few more months before this comes into effect.
All right, and a word on risk, though, that this show, one of the underlying themes of this show is state-sponsored corporatism, and your book, this isn't what your book is on, I know, but I mean, isn't it intentional, though, that these laws benefit corporations on the one hand, but also these companies, it seems to me that these companies are too big to fail, so that's why they are less risky. That's why institutional investors invest in these companies. However, when they do fail, they fail big time. And it seems to me, though, that they would be better off investing in a bunch of small companies and spreading their risk, like a pension fund. It would be better off spreading their risk over a bunch of small companies, and a few of them take off, and a few of them might fail, but then ultimately they would be in the black.
Yes, and there's no question that if you can find a fund that invests in a bunch of local businesses or projects or properties or individuals, you'll be able to diversify the risk, and that will be helpful to you as an investor. The problem is that there's something like 10,000 funds in the United States, and almost all of them are focused 100% on publicly traded companies or things that are similar. And the reason is, again, the perverse result of securities laws. The securities laws made it extremely difficult and expensive for communities to set up small investment funds for small companies. But again, this is an area that's beginning to change. It hasn't really changed legally yet, although I think it might soon. But I did a handbook about 6 months ago with three other people on community investment funds. And we found 20 funds in the United States that are investing in local businesses or local properties and allow grassroots investors to participate. And their numbers are growing. People are getting very creative about this, and I think we'll see a lot more of these funds in the near future. So I would say to your listeners, if you do find it, you know, too onerous, and many of us do, to think about a local investment one by one, because it does require some research and some management and thinking about things, if you rather would have a fund do that, in time, these funds will emerge.
Well, and then so those you have to go through Fidelity and things like, and Vanguard or something like that. You have to go through to buy those funds, or can you buy them directly?
No, if you the problem, of course, is that the Fidelities and the Vanguards, everything that they call impact investing or socially responsible investing, in fact, has nothing to do with local business.
Right.
And that is the problem right now.
But how do you invest in the 25?
On the one hand, corporate investment, and then you have better corporate investment, but you don't have local business investment.
But how do you invest in those 25 funds that that you found in your handbook?
Directly.
Oh, okay.
So you can invest directly, and some of the funds are organized so that they accept investment from investors across the country, and some of them are set up that they only accept investment from local investors.
Right, and then some of them have a minimum too of $2,000 to $5,000 or whatever, which is all right. And then so you spend quite a bit in your book, Putting Money Where Your Life Is, about the returns of small businesses are very comparable to corporate. To what you would find on the stock exchange.
Well, in fact, you know what data we have suggests it's better, and that is that if you look at the typical returns of sole proprietorships compared to say C corporations, they're three times greater with partnerships lying in between, and we have a nice study from Canada that looked at companies and found that the most profitable companies had 10 to 20 employees, And the least profitable companies were those with over 500 employees traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange. The problem is that in order to take full advantage of the profitability of these companies, you need a diverse pool that people have good information around. And that's what's missing in the local investment universe right now. That, you know, if you work hard, you can find companies to invest in, you can find pieces of real estate to invest in, and frankly, you can invest in yourself and invest in your neighbors and your kids, and there's all kinds of things like that that we can talk about.
Well, and
everyone
says you should pay off your credit cards before you do any of this, too.
Absolutely. And that's, yeah, that, and I make that point in the book that the best investment that you can make is getting yourself out of any credit card debt. And then once you're done, getting your kids out of credit card debt or out of student loan debt, and then thinking about investing in a house is usually a much better return than Wall Street. And if you have a mortgage, paying down your mortgage faster is much better than Wall Street. And if you have a house and own it free and clear, putting in energy efficiency systems or creating a greenhouse or buying renewable transportation systems, these often pay better than Wall Street. But once you get all of that done, yes, you know, start to look at other things, other businesses.
Well, and then there's also, in addition to your return, there's the return of your social return. What's the term that you use for social return, that you're supporting your community and ultimately supporting yourself by supporting your community?
Yeah. Well, social return is the common term. You could call it a community return. But it's different than your private return. So most of us, when we invest, we think about, okay, I throw money to some black hole at the other side of the universe, and it's going to pay me 5-6% per year. And, you know, that's my return. And for many people, that's the only way they think about it. But I think a growing number of us also think about other forms of return. So if you invest in a bunch of local businesses in your community, you not only get that direct rate of return, but because those businesses are contributing to the local tax base, they're good for your schools, they're good for the police operations, they're good for beautification, and they contribute to the quality of neighborhood life. And that also is a rate of return for people.
All right, so your book, Putting Money Where Your Life is about self-directed IRAs and solo 401ks. And you call them DIY accounts. So what is a DIY account?
So I just use the term DIY, for, you know, or do it yourself, DIY. Because these are the accounts that enable you to move your tax-deferred pension funds into accounts that you in turn can invest in yourself or in local businesses or local projects. And again, here's the basic problem. You may be a great enthusiast of local investing, but all your money is probably tied up in an IRA or a 401k, and it's either held by your employer in a certain kind of fund that's all in corporations, big corporations, or it's held by yourself. Maybe you've got an account, as you said, in Vanguard or Fidelity. But again, the options that you're given are 100% global corporations. So if you want to invest locally, it is exceedingly difficult to do this with these large-scale investment companies. So what you have to do is create one of two things. One thing that anyone can do is create a self-directed IRA. And with a self-directed IRA, you control the money. But you have to hire a custodian who you instruct where to put your money, and you can instruct your custodian, I want to lend my tax-deferred money to my neighbor. If my neighbor made a really good case for why she should have a loan from me. And so you could do that, or you could put it into a business or put it into a co-op or your favorite nonprofit, whatever you want to do. The other option is the solo 401k, and that is for self-employed people. So a solo 401k allows someone to basically create their own investment fund in their own bank account.
All right. Well, now the solo 401k, I had to look at this again. You only have to have shown a dollar of revenue. You've only have to have earned a dollar, but you can't, like, if I have savings, if I have $10,000 in savings, I can't just use that. I can't just say I started a, because I do have a doing business as a sustainable design company that I've never earned any money from, but I can't just take my savings and push it over into this, account, and all of a sudden it has to be derived. The money that goes into your solo 401k has to be derived from your home business. Is that correct?
Yeah, it has to be. So most of your listeners will relate to this being employees. So, you know, your employer will give you an option to set up to have this pension fund, and if your employer is really good, they'll give you a match for every dollar you put in the fund. And that money is tax deferred and in theory grows for many years. And then when you hit retirement age over 65, you can withdraw that money. You have to pay tax on it, but you know, by then the money has grown substantially. So that's in theory what happens. With a solo 401k, it's the same deal that I'm withdrawing money from either my salary or my profit stream, and I put that money away, tax deferred. And Uncle Sam won't see it until I hit retirement. Now, what will happen for most people is, you know, you set up a solo 401k as a very small account because most of us, you know, have small self-employment income. But then most of us also at some earlier point in our life worked for a company or the government or someone else and had this larger retirement fund, and you roll over that larger retirement fund into your solo 401k. And then you can go to town as a full-fledged local investor.
All right, and for those that don't understand the basics of retirement, what a deferment is let's say you're taxed, let's say you earn $50,000, but you open up a $6,000 IRA. Now you are only taxed on $33,000 or $43,000 instead of $50,000. So you're taxed the same rate, but the base amount of money that you're taxed on is lower. So just to point that out for those that don't understand tax deferment. So
yeah, and if you put off enough money, it can put you in a lower bracket. So I mean, and what's just to compare the self-directed IRA with the solo 401k, with a self-directed IRA like a regular IRA, you can put away $6,000 or $7,000 per year. So it's, you know, it's some amount of money, but it's not huge. In the case of a solo 401k, there are ways that you can put away over $100,000 per year.
But basically $56,000. Easily $56,000, right. But yeah, so go on. I'm sorry.
Yes. And if you bring your spouse into it, that's when you can double it, and lots of couples work that way. But yes, so the point is that with the solo 401k, you can put away more money. The other thing you can do with the solo 401k is that you can take a loan yourself. You can take a loan for up to $50,000 over 5 years. You have to pay your account back at a low interest rate over those 5 years, And if you don't do that, you'll be penalized. But that gives you the ability to put a down payment on a house or pay off credit cards and all of the kind of self-investments that we talked about earlier.
Well, but what's really cool is the interest that you're paying the interest to yourself is what's blowing my mind. Is you're actually, they're making you pay interest because they want you to save for retirement. The whole idea of all this stuff is to encourage you to save for retirement. So that's why you're paying interest to yourself, and they require you to pay it back fast because they want you, they're trying to encourage you to save for your retirement. So I can see it's kind of weird, but that's, I can see there. But again, I just want to point out, though, that that money has to be derived. Either it has to be rolled over from another retirement account, or it has to be derived from your home business. You can't just take money that you've saved as a salaried employee and put it in your solo 401k.
That's right.
And then what do they call an employee? Is it a 1099 employee that is like, it's if you're a truck driver and you can and you're paid as an employee as a self business as a truck driver, even though you work for another company, they pay you as your own business. Does that count?
Yeah, that certainly would count. I mean, I work largely. I mean, I work as a part-time employee for a company. But I also work largely for myself, so I get lots of 1099s. I report that on my Schedule C for my home-based business, and then any of the net proceeds of that, I could take money out either for a solo 401k or for a self-directed IRA.
All right, so gig employees, this would be great for a gig employee, right? Aren't those all 1099s? Okay.
Yes.
So there's a lot of that going on.
The solo 401k is especially useful, I would say, for someone who has a bumper crop year. You know, like say you're a musician and you're starving 4 out of 5 years, and the fifth year you get a gigantic sum of money from a huge hit song that you sell. That would be the year to create a solo 401k.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you have the cash sitting in the bank, though. That's the other problem, is you have to have the cash sitting in the bank, and then you can add to it later. But to get the deferment, you have to have the amount of the deferment has to be amount of cash that you have is how much is deferred.
Right. That's right. So. I mean, a lot. That's why I think, you know, most people, the way that they use their deferments is they have their employer just take a certain small amount out of their paycheck every pay period, because that's the way they make sure it happens. So it requires, for a self-employed person, you have to be more disciplined about, you know, keeping some money in reserve. So when it comes to the end of the year, you have put that money into your account and then can remove that from taxation.
Well, and if you've had a good year, you're going to end up paying a lot of taxes. So that's a perfect time to do it for that reason, too, so that you don't pay a bunch of taxes that, by the way, they use for military industrial complex support anyway. But
absolutely.
And you want to keep your money out of that. So, all right. So the types of investments that I researched, for one thing, I've been told that municipal bonds, municipal bonds is a way to invest in your community, because these are loans and there are municipal bonds that are specific. You can buy them specifically for certain projects that you want to support in your community. But now the people I've asked say that those are for, like, the credit union, the advisor at my credit union said these are for people that don't want to, that are paying high taxes, that are, he's basically said they're for wealthy people that don't want to put their money in, a large chunk of money in the bank, that then the interest, they're going to pay a large amount of taxes on the interest. But and they are risky to put. There have been failures of cities, but even I remember, I think you're old enough to remember when New York City failed in, I think it was the 70s or 80s, completely failed. And they're not going to let L.A. or New York fail for any length of time.
I remember when the Washington Public Power Supply System failed around you. because they were building five grotesque nuclear power plants that no one could afford. And ultimately, almost the whole region went bankrupt as a result.
But, and so they didn't bail out the bondholders, though. The bondholders are going to be the first to be paid, the muni bondholders, aren't they?
Well, in the cases you're talking about, a lot of the bondholders got pennies on the dollar of what they held. So, yeah, municipal bonds are not risk-free. Stocks are not risk-free. Almost anything you invest in is not going to be risk-free. So you can find glorious examples of failure in these things. And the truth is that most municipal bonds are hard for the average person to buy because the minimum denomination, well, if you go to a bond fund, you're going to be buying not one bond issue, but you're going to be buying a pool of bonds from 1,000 different places. So it's very hard to geographically target your purchase.
Uh-huh.
For a couple of years, there was a website called Neighborly, which actually worked with cities to help them issue municipal bonds for very discrete projects and to organize them so that people living in the community could buy those bonds at smaller denominations, say $500 instead of $5,000. And this, you know, it worked very well for a while, but they weren't able to get quite the profit rate that they wanted, so they shut down. But I think there will be other companies that step in. And in the meantime, you know, a smart city, I think, would think about how to issue municipal bonds for certain priority projects and really encourage people living in the city to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of an untapped opportunity for cities that are strapped because, you know, because of all the shutdowns and COVID and they've lost tax dollars and companies are really hurting. This is the time when cities could issue bonds for very discrete projects, and those who could afford to hold those bonds could really help bail out the city.
All right, and we'll get into how do we approach the these entities in a few minutes here, but let me just go through the other types of investments. And then I lucked out before the interest rates went down and before this COVID thing, I had just put a – I didn't realize you could have a CD IRA, so a CD certificate of deposit with my credit union.
Yep.
So that's being
yep.
loaned to local people, and it's insured through the credit union. So I'm probably not going to – unless the credit unions all fail, which is highly unlikely, I'm pretty much risk-free, but I'm not – I'm only getting – I am getting like 2.5% right now while interest rates are zero. So I hope I'm not ruining my credit union right now, but
Right. Well, that's – no, and I think, you know, for any local investor, if you cannot find – a better, more specific investment, probably the best thing to do is to put your money in a local bank or credit union, and it will be federally insured, and you'll get, you know, I mean, you're getting 2.5% is pretty good. Most people would get less than that these days. But yeah, that's sort of the last call if you don't find anything better.
Right, and the city of Eugene, I called them, and they have gotten out of the major banks. If you're in a city, if you're listening to this in a city, encourage your city to get out of the big three, Wells Fargo and those banks. Don't run their business, the city's business, through a major bank. They can run it through. They run it through Umpqua Bank, a local bank here. All right. So then,
right.
when I researched the WeFunder sites, then. You know, these are similar to crowdfunding. They're crowdfunding sites that pay you interest instead of being just donating money to try to help someone start a business, which is really admirable. You're donating money to help somebody start a business, and then you're paid a return. You're either loaning them or you get equity in the company. And most of the ones on WeFunder and Honeycomb, though, are breweries and restaurants, which a restaurant has always been very risky investment. So there's a range of investments, and then, like I said, I found you through the Sustainable Economies Law Center, and what they have this Next Egg project that, again, is another thing that you want to look at. And on there, they had People Power Solar, which is a co-op in California. So when I researched them, I did an interview with them, and then I looked up the co-op here in Oregon. There is a solar co-op here in Oregon that will return you 4%, and they are invested in a school, putting solar panels on a school, which hopefully we will still have school buildings after this COVID thing. But and then they have a sewage treatment plant that they're putting solar panels on the sewage treatment plant. So I would think that was a fairly less risky investment, where it's a government project.
Yep. Yeah, I think I it sounds like you found some good options there. And there's a lot of renewable energy projects around the country that I think are offering pretty good, reliable investments. I mean, even with these projects, of course, you know, as we mentioned, if municipal bonds can fail, federally or government-backed projects can fail too. So, you know, for any of these investments, you have to do some research unless you have a fund that's doing the research for you. And that's why one of the things that I recommend is that people who get involved in this, you know, try to do it in a group. Find some fellow travelers there. And in Oregon, that shouldn't be too difficult. There's a lot of people with interest in this. And as a group of 5 or 10 people, look at a bunch of companies and divvy up the responsibilities for researching them and talking with them and looking at the investments, interviewing people, and then making the decisions with sort of some collective wisdom.
All right, and this is KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Peaceworks Community Radio. I'm talking with Michael Schumann, who's just come out with a book, Put Your Money Where Your Life Is. All right, so then I noticed there's these CDFIs and this thing, these funds called OWISTA. You can invest in helping Native Americans get loans to help in their communities, help start businesses in their communities. And then there's a bunch of COVID-19 things that and these are funds that people have gotten a grant. These organizations have gotten a grant, so they have a base amount of funds, and then you can then they will borrow money in addition to these funds. So they have this base of money. And just as an aside, I also taught LA Eco Village is Lois Arkin is a very famous sustainable author. And she has the LA Eco Village, and you can loan her money for, and they're going to make an improvement on, they've converted an old gas station into a restaurant that grows its own food and things like that. So, again, there's opportunities to help, to do some really great work and help people with this, get out of the COVID-19 problems.
And one of the things I would, you know, recommend to listeners is, you know, trying to find investment opportunities that really are in your backyard so that you can talk with the owner, talk with the workforce, test out the product and the service and really, you know, make sure that you have confidence in what you're investing in. So, you know, even though I'm a great fan of the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund, which is one of the 20 funds that's out there that supports local business, I wouldn't encourage people investing across the country in it. I think the better challenge is finding those companies or projects in Oregon and preferably, you know, in close to the city where you are. That you can put your money in and really have confidence that they're being well run.
Well, that's just it. There's eco villages up here in Oregon that I want, and that's what I want. The next question I want to ask is, how do I approach these people? But before I get to that, there's also slow money. Apparently, is these farm to table things where you give, you loan them money and then you get produce for that as when the harvest comes, and these farms use the money to make improvements on their farms, and then you're paid. Isn't that what slow money is, that you're paid in produce?
So slow money is a It was started by Woody Tash about 10 years ago, and it based on a book that he wrote called Slow Money. And the idea was to organize investors and other people to look at ways of putting their money into small farms and local food businesses. And there's probably several thousand people around the country that have gotten interested in slow money, and some of them in communities have set up investment clubs. Like in Maine, for example, there's a club called No Small Potatoes of people who do local investment. And then Slow Money as an organization also has created some other I wouldn't call them investment vehicles. They're more like donation vehicles, but they're interesting, and they do support family farms and local food businesses. So, you know, that is one of finding people in your community who are affiliated with Slow Money certainly is one way of building a kind of local team or group or club.
All right. And then there's Hatch. You told me about Hatch, Oregon, and there's apparently new laws here in January. So they are updating their site to include investments that apply, that the new laws, the new laws make more of investments will be available with these new laws. So they're updating their site, Hatch, Oregon. So yeah, how do you start a list, and where do you find these investor lists? Sustainable investment club is what you recommend starting with your book. Put your money where your life is.
Unfortunately, there is not one go-to place where you can easily find all of the local investments that are available in your community. But one place to go that is very helpful is called investibule.co. And Investibule basically is a consolidator site. It takes data from all of the federally registered crowdfunding sites. So again, investment crowdfunding, not donation crowdfunding, and it organizes it by place. So you can go to Investibule, put in, click on Oregon, and suddenly you will see all of the crowdfunding offerings available on nationally licensed sites, and these then could be potential things you put your money into.
All right, and then so how do I approach these places? Like your other book, I forget which one it is. If you want to pitch your other books, the one on small business incubators talks about a card. I think it was your book that talks about a card from a credit union that when you use the card, it supports local businesses. I can't remember. And it's an alternative currency scheme. It started with a B. I've got it in my notes somewhere, but I can't find it.
Bernal Buck.
That's the one.
And it was launched in Bernal Heights, in a neighborhood in San Francisco, by a credit union there. And the way that it works is that when you have a debit card with a bank, any bank, there's some percentage of every transaction that goes back to the bank as a fee. And Arno Hess, who was a former banker, approached his local credit union in Bernal Heights and said, I have an idea. Why don't you just give the fee to me, and I'll help you rebrand the card as a local business support card. So Bernal Bucks became this branded debit card. And so the fees that come back as a result of that are supporting one full-time person who is educating the people in the Bernal Heights Credit Union about the importance of doing their spending in local businesses.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Who does he talk to at his credit union? You just march into their main office and say, who do I talk to about giving me the fee the credit card, the transaction, is that that's the fee that each ATM generates or takes.
Yes. So Arno Hess is a very clever entrepreneur, and that's what makes these systems fly, is being a clever entrepreneur. So, you know, it's I wouldn't encourage people to march into their credit union without a lot of research to do this, but it certainly is plausible that with some work you could develop a system with your credit union or your local bank that look like this, and convince people to start replacing, you know, their non-local bank issued debit or credit cards with local bank debit cards, and that would be a big step forward in keeping money in your community.
Uh-huh. And then approach the credit union and say, look, we've gotten a bunch of people to use their cards this way, to use your card. Can you kick back some of your fees? All right, so we have a company here, Down to Earth Garden Center, that's a high-end sustainable or permaculture garden center. I'm trying to get a hold of them. I'm trying to get that hold of them to do underwriting for the station, but I mean, I can't even get, you know, how do you get in the door to these places? And the eco villages too, they're not getting, it's out here in Dexter, Oregon. I just did an interview with him, and he was just mildly interested. I told him I was going to do this interview with you about, and that people could invest in his eco village, and they need, for instance, their buildings aren't facing south, so they could put a greenhouse on the south side of their buildings, maybe, you know, have a project to do that. Or we have an eco village, Maitreya Eco Village here has a methane digester that, you know, we could get, that has been passed by the county, that you can, that we could get these get places to put in methane digesters. How do I approach businesses and get them on this list that you're talking about? You're talking about a handbook. You're saying that once you start this handbook companies that are looking for money, that a bunch of companies will jump on that handbook, that website.
So there's a bunch of ideas that you just went through there, and but let's pick out one of them, which is, there could be value of a community putting on a website every business that is looking for capital. I and a colleague did this in the city of Baltimore, and we have a website called the Maryland Neighborhood Exchange. And we list on our website all of the Baltimore companies that have listed on national crowdfunding websites, and we encourage people in Baltimore to go to those sites and invest in Baltimore businesses. And in the last year, we have helped 20 of these businesses raise $200,000 in investment dollars. No reason you couldn't do that as well. So list companies on a website, say in Eugene or Salem, that are listed on the national websites. And then the next thing to do is you have to develop a capacity to help educate businesses how they can take advantage of crowdfunding. So like anything, it requires certain skills. It requires a business to build a fan base and then convert that fan base into a universe of investors. So one of the reasons why you see a lot of restaurants or breweries on these crowdfunding sites is they have a pretty natural list of several thousand people who are their fans. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very natural list for them to turn to for investment. And it's, you know, trickier with like a technology company that has four clients. Mm-hmm. So It you know, not every company is going to be is going to find it easy to raise capital on the national crowdfunding sites, but some will. And I think that you know, too many of our small businesses, all of which, by the way, are really struggling now after COVID.
Right.
Too many of our small businesses have just been told, oh, go to a bank for a loan, or, you know, pitch your friends and neighbors, or look to angel investors, or go to a venture capitalist. And most of these things are dead ends. Raising money from your natural fans and customers is obvious. It's available to everyone. And again, this is why businesses run by women and people of color have done so well, because, you know, it is more of a meritocracy that enables you to naturally raise money from people who are your supporters.
All right. So I admit I may be putting the cart before the horse, but is it, and I hear what you're saying, but I mean, should I go to these, would they take my call if I went into these businesses and said, hey, are you looking for money? And do you know about crowdfunding? Why don't they know about it? Go on.
Yeah. So almost no one knows about it, either on the investment side or the business side. So it's new. And, you know, companies and investors, you know, are deluged with information from conventional sources. But I think a really good model is something called LION. So LION stands for the Local Investment Opportunity Network. It was set up in Port Townsend, Washington, a small town, 10,000 people north of Seattle. It was set up in 2008. And LION is just a monthly gathering of businesses looking for investment and, you know, grassroots people who are interested in investment. And it's very informal. And just through those relationships, this 10,000 person town has been able to generate $800,000 of new investment locally every year since 2008. So, you know, a lot of this is about relationships. It's about conversations, it's about networking, and yes, it's about education too. But I think just, you know, creating some kind of social place where businesses and investors can come together and meet one another is the place where the magic can start to happen.
All right, yeah, we have a sustainable investment website here in a sustainable business investment business site. All right, and then one thing I left out was real quick, and then we'll wrap this up, is lead investors. So I noticed WeFunder and Honeycomb have lead investors. What is a lead investor? And that lowers risk a little bit.
So I'm not sure how they're using the term. It probably means that it's, you know, if you're a first level investor, you come in early, you put in a larger than expected amount of money, you know, you're going to take on more of the risk. And then other, you know, it's sort of like when bigger companies do multiple rounds of investment, the first round of investors takes on certain risks and returns, and then there's the next round, and it changes a little bit. So, but you know, this is, you have to look at the fine print of all of this. And that's, you know, that's the downside of crowdfunding, is that you may buy, a loan note, or you may buy a piece of stock in a brewery, but you can't resell it easily. So with the loan note, it'll be repaid over a certain number of years. You know how you're going to get your money back. But with a piece of stock, there's no local stock exchange for resale. So you have to really look carefully about, what am I going to do with this? What is the market for this? Will the company buy it back? So these are among the challenges right now in the local investment universe.
Yeah, and I noticed the breweries and those, and the pizza parlor, and that they're paying 10%. Some of them paying 12%, but you're a higher risk. And so anytime there's a higher return, there's going to be a higher risk. Whereas, like I say, it's 4% for the co-op here in Eugene, the solar co-op. They're only paying 4%, and I would think it's a little less risk. All right, so Michael H. Schumann, author of Put Your Money Where Your Life Is, and many other you've written several books on local investing. Is there anything else you want to say to wrap this up?
Well, I would just say if people are interested in learning more about this, my website is www.michaelhshuman.com. You could find, I do a blog every week, and I'm about to open up a grassroots education course for would-be local investors. So people who want to get more information, that may be a place to start, but the book is also a perfectly good place to start as well.
Right, and the next egg, too, is Sustainable Economies Law Center. All right, Michael H. Shuman, thank you very much for your time. I should pay you a consulting fee for this.
You did. It was just indirect.
Okay.
Fruits and vegetables and selling books. That's what it's all about.
All right, and we'll look for your it's a webinar that you're on michaelhshuman.com.
Right. It'll be a course being announced in the next couple of weeks. So just sign up on the website and you'll get all the information you need.
All right, thanks again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, this is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Community Radio. Again, we've been talking to Michael Shuman. Invest locally. Get out of multinational corporations. There is stuff you can do. I'm inspired. I don't know about you. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media.
Hello and welcome to Train of Thought. My name's Rob Tobias.
Occupy Medical offers free medical services to all in need every Sunday from noon until 4 p.m. Soon, they will be offering free shuttles from the pods behind Eugene Library to their Springfield office at 1717 Centennial Boulevard. Shuttles will start at 11:30 and run every 30 minutes until the end of the day. The last shuttle will get back to the library in time for people to collect their belongings from the pods.
Aloha, this is Nako with Medicine for the People. You're listening to KEPW FM LP 97.3 right here on the channel, the lifeline straight to the home. Wherever you are, we are listening, we are shouting out. All nature responds, aloha.
Occupy Medical offers free medical services to all in need every Sunday from noon until 4 p.m. Soon, they will be offering free shuttles from the pods behind Eugene Library to their Springfield office at 1717 Centennial Boulevard. Shuttles will start at 11:30 and run every 30 minutes until the end of the day. The last shuttle will get back to the library in time for people to collect their belongings from the pods.